If thinking back to learning maths at school makes you shudder, chances are you're not alone. But at one South Auckland primary school, they've implemented a new way of teaching maths to their students, and it's really paying off. Since Manurewa West's standardised maths assessment was rewritten to better reflect the real-life contexts and cultures of the school, student achievement in maths has moved from 42% to 79% in 2021. The driving force behind this is one of the school's deputy principals, Shay Bowden, and she's received recognition for the work she's done, this week winning the primary school apple at this year's National Excellence in Teaching Awards. Shay, kia ora, welcome.
Hi, morena.
I hope it's a gold apple, is it? Pure gold?
It would be lovely if it was gold, but no, it's not.
Look, wonderful to have you with us. Can you just give us an idea, I guess, of where this journey began, where students were at before you, I guess, rewrote the way maths was being taught?
Yeah, absolutely. So this journey started off in 2018. I was a part of what they call ALIM, so the Accelerating Literacy in Maths program, and it's a funded program through the ministry. And it's basically where you do acceleration through with like sort of five or six kids in one particular group. And through that, I met a facilitator who was really all about mixed ability grouping and crossing kids over, so taking away the idea of streaming. And that's what I was doing in this accelerated group. And it was taking off. And this lovely little group that I had for a whole year did such incredible things. And from that, we sort of looked at our whole school-wide data and obviously realized that we had a serious problem because the majority of them were only achieving around, you know, 40 to 45% at max was how many of our kids across the school were achieving. And it obviously isn't good enough, especially since the dynamic of our school is largely Māori Pacifica. We're nearly 50-50 with a growing Indian group. Back then in 2018, it was largely just Māori and Pacifica, and they were always at the tail end of everything, like we constantly hear. So from there, I spoke to the facilitator that I was using and asked how we could, you know, make this better. How could we roll this out across the whole school? Because I obviously had the results to prove that it worked. And then we applied to the ministry for some PLD hours, and we were really, really lucky. We got 200 hours, which is not normal. Not many schools are allowed to get that many hours. And we had that over 2 years, and she actually managed to retain as our school facilitator. And then we started this two-year journey with her around class culture in particular, and actually looking at a growth mindset, learning pit, and not just, you know, as those hot topic words, they're always words that we throw around, but actually what does that look like for our kids? What does it look like in the classroom? And then from there, moving into mixed ability groupings as well as context-driven word problems, you know, real life action where they can actually see how math is important, how it relates to them. And that's been sort of like a 5-year journey. And obviously COVID came along in the middle of that and sort of created some issues. And now we've just sort of picked back up again this year, and we've just finished off this year with our data, just over 80% wow. of our schools leaving at or above, with 25% of that above, which is humongous. So, yeah.
And this is 5 to 12 year olds, yeah?
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, let's just take these in parts, please. The PLD, Professional Learning Development, is that an extra advisor, if you like, that you were able to get ours funded for?
Yeah, so there's obviously lots of facilitators out there, lots of different companies that can bring in and do sort of professional development for teachers on different areas. And you can apply to the ministry for some funding in order to obviously fund these outside facilitators. So that was what we did initially. But to get 200 hours was quite excessive. We couldn't believe we got that many, which meant that we could roll it over 2 years. So we had this, you know, solid PLD program around really growing the culture of our school and the classroom culture in particular and what that looks like. And just the idea that it's one thing to be for a child to feel safe in school, where you walk through the front gates and they know that they're going to be safe and looked after. But it's a different type of safe for kids inside the classroom, for them to take risks and know that it's okay if they fail. So it's we spend a lot of time around what that looks like for our kids and what that looks like for us as a school with staff as well. How do we model that? How do we show the kids that it's okay to be wrong and take the fear out of something that, like you said before, is terrifying for lots of people and our kids included in that.
It's such a yes-no kind of subject compared to other subjects. I think that's often what people find challenging about it if they're not okay with failure. Now, the growth mindset brings to mind Carol Dweck, wonderful educator.
Yep.
And this is all about, you don't tell a kid that they're brilliant, you tell a kid that they really persevere and you admire that. So explain more about that aspect of culture, that kids were praised for their perseverance and tolerated when they got things wrong before they got them right.
Yeah, absolutely. So that growth mindset is that, you know, obviously that concept of I can't do it right now. So it's, you know, not this big doom and gloom that you got something wrong. And obviously it lends itself beautifully to maths because, like you said, it's a whole lot of, you follow this process, you get it right, end of. If you get it wrong, then you start again, you do the same process again. And that's what makes maths so scary for lots of kids. With the growth mindset, it's the concept of when we launch a problem in our classrooms, we get the kids to group together. So math should not be in isolation. It should not be the standalone. You all sit at individual desks and I'm going to give you a problem and I want you to work your way through it and then we'll see if you got it right or not. So we take the focus off the answer and we put more focus on the journey itself. And we have a saying at our school around it's about the journey, not the destination. I'm not so interested in your answer, but I'm really, really interested in how you got there and what you did in your head and what discussions you had with the people around you around how you might get to where you need to be. And the destination itself is secondary. It's not the most important thing. So when you take the focus off whether or not the answer is right or wrong, kids are far more likely to give something a go. Alongside that, you talk about the learning pit, which is a big part of our school. We've got big walls dedicated to the learning pit in every classroom in our school. And it's that whole idea of you need to get in the pit, you need to swim around in it, you need to be uncomfortable, you need to really not enjoy yourself in there, and then realize that all these other people around you are going to lend you a hand and help you out of the pit. And when you get out of the pit, you're going to completely understand what it was that you were struggling with before. And a lot of our kids will refer to the learning pit, like, I'm in the pit, you know, I don't know what I'm doing, I'm in the pit, I need some help. And that's really nice. And as staff, we also do that as well. We talk a lot about how we're in the pit. We need our rest of our colleagues to help us pull us out as well. So a lot of leaning into the whole idea of what that looks like, but not just talking about it, but actually physically doing it. What does it look like? If I walk into your classroom and you're telling me you've got a growth mindset classroom, what does that look like? What are the kids saying? What are they feeling? Is there laughter? Is there, you know, lots of discussion? Is it a quiet classroom? Is it a noisy classroom because they're busy, because they're talking? And so we did a lot of work around that. And that in itself has kind of become the foundation for this new initiative that we've brought in, because the kids have got the confidence to fail, which is that whole idea around growth mindset and learning pit and making it okay.
How do you make sure that within the group, individual kids are, to use an old phrase around maths, getting it? In other words, that they're not just kind of hidden within the group and you know, and happy to sort of be hidden within the group. How do you individually assess?
Yeah, that's a really good question as well. And honestly, at the beginning, that was certainly an issue that we faced as well, because you always have those kids that are really confident that obviously come to the top, you know, and want to, you know, I can do this and I've got all the answers. And it is easy to hide behind those kids. But what we do in our groups is sometimes if you've got a class where you've got those kids who you know need that one-on-one, it's that tour kind of tone approach, you will sort of kind of guide them to be with a certain group of kids who I know, or the teacher knows, have that knowledge, who are going to be standing there, sitting around, talking about it, discussing it, and they're listening. You have a question, when you launch a question, you'll say, you know, talk about it, make sure everyone understands it, but I want someone to be the person that's going to share back. So as a group, you decide. And the teacher walks around. So even though the role of the teacher changes and it's gone from I'm the bearer of all knowledge, I know everything, you need to sit there and listen to it, which doesn't exist anymore. You know, it's that reciprocal thing of I'll give you all the help that you need, but I'm going to walk around because I really want you guys to teach each other. And that's something that we've had to build so that as you are walking around, you can hear the discussions that the kids are having. You can hear what words the kids are talking about. You can look and you can see the kids that are looking a little bit blankly. And they're the kids that you'll sit beside in that group and say, you know, how are you going? What do you think? And so you'll then start bringing in your own talk moves, that discourse around getting them to get the ideas out so that I can get a little bit more information to see whether or not they do understand, or whether or not they're just listening and taking it all in. So it is very hands-on for teachers, but not in the sense of you're standing at the front and then you're, you know, completing a math test and then I'm going to tick it and see whether or not you got it right and then I'm going to get my information. It's very formative assessment. It's very conversation-based. It's very I'd like to see what you can do. Let's do one together, especially for those kids who I'm not sure have fully got it. We'll break off and do little workshops as well. So I'll, you know, happily say, if you don't think you've got it yet, there's no shame in that. And our kids are really quick to come forward and say, no, I need more help. And then we'll have like a little group down together on the floor and we'll do it together one by one while the rest of the kids kind of move on and continue. So it allows for a bit of differentiation there.
How do the assessments happen then that get us from, what was it, 42% to 80%? How do the assessments happen, particularly later in school? And because that idea that you're sitting down with your blank piece of paper and showing your markings and you know, getting a tick or a cross, and I want to talk more about the high school context in a moment, but at some point before the end of their primary schooling, are they being individually assessed in that way?
Yeah, they are. So we obviously, we still use gloss within our school, but what I do now, especially with our senior kids, is we prepare them for intermediate as we tailor make our testing that we do. And because even though, you know, kids should be discussing and we, you know, we want them to talk, we also need to prepare them for what they're about to face as well as they go through to intermediate and into college. So they need to understand what a testing situation looks like and how to pull something apart and actually see it for what it is. So we do a lot of authentic tasks. So if there's a word problem, if we're looking at, for example, add sub, and there's a question, and instead of giving it to them as this, you know, sterile question of it's, I don't know, for example, 24 plus 46, and they see it as a standalone, we give it to them in a context that's familiar to them. So it might be to do with something that's happening in school that they've been fully immersed in. We bring in their own culture. We bring in all the things that are happening for them in the community. And then we'll put that question into an authentic context that therefore they can relate to. So by doing that, they're able to springboard off the knowledge that they already have and see what the question is asking them. Basically take the numbers out, work out the domain that they need to use, and then pull it out from a real life problem and then solve it basically from there.
How important is that context? I mean, obviously, if you're being presented with a scenario that is completely unfamiliar to you, and how life works for you, how the home works, how friends work, then you've kind of almost got to do a two-step process. You've got to understand the question first. And this was interesting. This came up with some of the recent NCEA small group pre-testing. And well, at least one of the teachers was saying to us, the kids were spending so much time trying to work out what you were actually asking them to do that they were, you know, it was impairing the fact that they knew the actual underlying mathematical process.
Yeah.
So how important is context to even getting even a primary age child understanding what it is you want them to do, relating to it?
Yeah, hugely. And especially if you consider the, you know, the lack of literacy skills that a lot of our kids are coming through with now at the moment as well. If they can't find any key words in a problem that they can make some sort of connection to, all that happens is they put all these barriers up, all the walls start going up, and they just go, nah, can't do it, I'm out. And they don't even try. And it's devastating because we know they can do it, but you haven't given them all the tools to be successful within it. And this is the problem that we're having. And I truly believe this with South Auckland, is that we're so busy trying to shove these kids into a box that they don't fit inside of and then complain that they're, you know, that they're not achieving, but we're the ones that are creating that problem for them. If we don't give them that context, something that they can relate to, that they can go, I understand what she's asking me because I did that, or I had, you know, I went to the shop with my mum and I understand what that question is talking about, then you're just making things harder than they need to be. And for something like maths, where kids often already approach it, you know, with a bit of risk because, oh, I might get it wrong and then people will look at me and then there's peer pressure and there's all these things on top of that. If you take away all those barriers and you break maths down to its bare bones, it's not scary. It shouldn't be scary for kids. Kids should enjoy it. It should be hands-on. It should be engaging. They should love it because it's a huge part of every single part of their lives. And if they don't have a solid foundation skill of numeracy, it closes off so many career pathways for them later on. And that's when they start dropping out of school because it just becomes too hard. So the context is really important, and you need to have that in the same with college as well. There needs to be a better bridging system around what we do in primary and then taking that into college so that the kids have got that same context-related teaching going on so they can better do better in exams as well.
Can you speak to that transition? Because I know it's really important to you. And are we seeing, I'm just getting my literacy, my maths confused now, that there's a critical point at which we really start to see a drop-off? And we've seen this coming through in some of our international testing. But let's stick with maths. Are you seeing a real brick wall that a cohort appears to be coming up against? And can you speak to that?
Yeah. So, you know, look, secondary teachers do a phenomenal job and they have so much content that they need to get through in order for their output, which is obviously their exam. So as kids come up against that, it's completely foreign to what they've been taught for effectively 8 years, in their primary school education. So when they're being taught things in standalone, you know, in isolation, and then basically to tick a box for an exam so they can get through, all those barriers I was just talking about start going up again. If we approach maths at secondary like we do in primary, where it's all context related, it's not streamed, you know, it's mixed, everyone's together, you've got that safety net around kids, kids are going to be far more likely to give something a go, and they're going to be able to answer those questions in an exam because they've built the resilience, they've built the confidence to go for it. What we're hearing lots, and my husband will be the first person to say it as well, is that you've got all these kids that are coming out of school and they've got all the paperwork, they've got the qualifications to go with it, but as soon as you give them a problem in a real life context, they don't know what to do with it because they've learnt everything in isolation. They've learnt everything in a box. And unless it's presented to them in that tiny little box, they don't know what to do with it. So maths needs to become more about problem solving and discussion and talking something through, because in the real world, you know, lots of different industries, that's what they have to do in order to solve problems within their workplace.
And more now than ever, with the prevalence of technology, engineering based challenges within so many organisations. Shay, what did you find happened? I guess you mentioned literacy challenges. What's happened with the changes in maths? Has it spilled over, whether it's confidence or attitude or anything else, has it spilled over to other areas of the children's learning?
Yeah, absolutely. We find that attendance has improved with maths. We've got kids that, so what we do with our senior kids in particular, because obviously they're the ones that are more independent and they can get themselves organised and get themselves to school. When we have workshop days, which is where, you know, they'll move across to other teachers who are teaching specific things that they need in order to keep moving. So they have goal books that they need to keep track of. On those workshop days, we've got kids that weren't attending before but are attending every single day for those workshops because they're so engaged, they love them so much that it's worth them coming to school for. So the attendance rate, in particular in our senior school and right across, but in particular our seniors, has improved greatly. We've just started our literacy review and we're moving into the same structure that we use for maths, but we're going to transfer it into literacy. So we're looking to see hopefully some really big results with our literacy. But the main one is with the confidence is that the kids are just really brave. You know, they will give anything a go. And that's the thing that I think as a school we're most proud of. It doesn't matter what it is. You know, there's no hesitance to give it a go because they feel safe that somebody's got their back. And if they get it wrong, then that's actually a good thing, because that's what we do here is we celebrate the wrong. You need to be wrong before you can be right. And it's okay to be wrong. So when we do reflection things in our classrooms, we talk a lot about what didn't go right today, as opposed to let's tell me all the good things that happened today and how well you did it, maths, or how well you did it, science, or whatever it was, because I already know that because I've been here with you. But what I really want to know is what you struggled with today, what didn't go so well, so that we can put things in place for tomorrow. So there's that constant support behind kids, and it's not necessarily, you know, all over them, like, you know, putting up all these structures. It's scaffolding kids into a situation where they know that they're going to be okay. It might not go okay the first time, but it will be okay in the end. And because of that, we've got this really beautiful thing going with our kids.
Shay, what's the story with sharing this with other schools? I think you're very open, aren't you, to other schools being in touch. I know we've had
absolutely.
The Kahui Ako, and we've had all sorts of, and teachers always insist, hey, we collaborate, but some collaborate and some end up, one suspects, just buried in problems. And, you know, you had the benefit of being able to get some resources to focus on this. What is it you want to say about spreading what's working, sharing what's working with other schools?
Yeah. Look, I think, you know, especially in these communities that, you know, are marginalised and, you know, all you hear from them is all the negativity, you know, they can't achieve, they can't do this, they can't do that. We're proving that that's nonsense and it can be done. And it's something that I'm incredibly passionate about. I've always worked in South Auckland. It is the best place to work as far as I'm concerned. These kids are absolutely amazing. And we need to start sharing around good practice so that all of our kids benefit. You know, even in Maidewa where I am, there's lots of primary schools. We need to be sharing it right across so that all of our kids, because it is transient, our kids do move from school to school, that wherever they go, they're going to get the same deal. And that's that equity that we keep talking about that our kids need in order for them to continue to be successful. So sharing good practice, you know, that's what teachers should be doing. That's what we usually do. We do share good practice, but sometimes we can be quite closed up as schools. So we do need to open our doors and say, hey, look, this is what's working for me. Come by, have a look at it, see if you can adapt it. The program that we use here for maths is tailored to our school. You know, the nuts and bolts of it, it's for our kids, it's for our community, it's within our own context, but there are big foundation parts of it that you can take anywhere. The culture side of it, the context side of it, the mixed ability, you can take that anywhere and it will work beautifully regardless of the community that you're in.
Ngamihi Shea, thanks very much for your time. Congratulations on the award and wonderful to hear the passion. Thank you. Shea Bowden is Deputy Principal at Manurewa West Primary School, also a teacher there. She was one of the winners at this year's National Excellence in Teaching Awards.